Disenchantment is the supporting condition for dispassion. The term in Pali for dispassion, viraga, as Gil mentioned last night, also can mean fading away. Disenchantment is a supporting condition for fading away. Fading away of desire. To explore this, I'd like to start back a little with disenchantment again. Revisit some of that. And see how one supports the other. So disenchantment comes as we really see things as they are, we gain a thorough understanding of the way things work in the world, and we really just begin to get it that our usual way of engaging in the world is not the way to happiness. We've been caught in this spell, believing that there maybe is something permanent, reliable out there for this sense of self to be happy with. And so this the spell of enchantment, delusion, ignorance, are really the spell weavers. And delusion and ignorance to me are, there are two different words in the Pali that to me speak to two different sides of the coin around this spell weaving. Ignorance, avijja in Pali, means absence of wisdom. The absence of understanding what is impermanent as impermanent. Understanding what's unreliable as reliable. That the avijja is that confusion around these. It's the lack of knowledge, the lack of understanding. And the delusion side, moha, so avijja is the absence of wisdom. And moha, delusion, to me speaks to the way that weaving happens. It's the presence of the active misunderstanding. So the absence of knowledge is not simply kind of a passive thing. The delusion carries it into our activities of mind. And so it actively weaves the spell, having us caught in this belief, this view. Yes, this is how happiness will be found. So we are enchanted by these misperceptions. And the first step in recognizing this enchantment is to begin to recognize, to see, to actually recognize, oh, this delusion is functioning. And as I said the other day in the talk on knowledge and vision of things as they are, beginning to see, the first few times we begin to recognize how things are so radically impermanent, so unreliable, that when the cloud of delusion comes back in, we know that it's operating. We know that it's functioning. There's a huge difference between being enchanted and not knowing that you're enchanted, and in being enchanted and being aware that the enchantment is happening. This is kind of our first movement towards disenchantment. We're still in it, but we start to see it. Start to see the spell weaving is happening. Bhikkhu Bodhi wrote a commentary, a modern day commentary on this sutta that we're exploring, the sutta about transcendent dependent origination, the Upanisa Sutta, it's called the Sutta on causes, proximate conditions, I think is what Upanisa means, proximate conditions. And he describes the experience of disenchantment in what seems like very glowing terms. He says, this experience of disenchantment is a serene, dignified withdrawal from phenomena when the mind has seen things as they are. In my own experience, it feels a lot messier than that. And so I'd like to explore a little bit of that messiness. And disenchantment does begin to arise with this meeting of impermanence. You really see the rapidity of change. We understand things are changing so fast. There's nothing that could possibly be reliable. There's this feeling of out of control. Causes and conditions tumbling so fast. And this meeting, this deep meeting of impermanence. Can have a lot of this place of beginning to be disenchanted with the experience of our lives through seeing the impermanence. It's like there's a lot of different emotional flavors that can come here. A lot of different responses, different relationships. These different relationships to impermanence might be almost seen perhaps as different aspects of the way our minds unhook from the enchantment. In different ways our minds become disenchanted through these different emotional tones or different doorways of reactions, responses, relationships to seeing impermanence. This experience, so clearly seeing there's nothing here for me. There's nothing here that's worth holding on to. The word nibbida, which is the word we're using for disenchantment. Disenchantment is our translation here. Also has been translated with a very alternative definition that sometimes just the very word creates a little bit of, oh, not sure I like that word. Sometimes this word nibbida is translated as revulsion or disgust. And that can be part of the experience. As we deeply meet this place of impermanence, there can be this feeling of like recoil, of disgust, of nothing here that's worth anything. So that can be one flavor of this relationship. Others that can come around this deep meeting of impermanence, fear, nowhere to land. Things are changing so fast, there's nowhere for the mind to even, like, for a moment, touch in and say, ah, this, ah, slipping away. This can create a space of a relationship of fear, sometimes even as much as terror. You feel like terror. You might have a quality of feeling overwhelm. So much, so fast. It's this relationship of might I turn this off somehow? And it can also move to another interesting place, this relationship to seeing this, just this tumbling of experience, formations, body, mind, tumbling on. That a quality of disinterest can become predominant. It's like it's almost in contrast to the way we have been interested. And the mind is just like, no, thank you. Full, enough of that. So just a kind of a disinterest in experience. Might be experienced as boredom. Sayadaw Ujjanika pointed to another quality. I practiced with Sayadaw Ujjanika in Burma for a while, and he pointed to another quality that sometimes can be a relationship to impermanence in this kind of terrain of disenchantment. He said, it kind of feels like homesickness. Again, you know, kind of a missing. It used to be that I kind of felt like there was something here. There was some place I could call home. And that's not here. I kind of have a feeling of homesickness sometimes. So many, many different emotional tones can come in this area. Nothing quite so simple, perhaps, as this serene, dignified withdrawal that Bhikkhu Bodhi mentions. But the traversal through these relationships, the pointing, the teaching, the instruction, really, that I've been offered. Notice your relationship. So notice the fear, notice the terror, notice the overwhelm. That is the way the mind begins to unhook from these enchantments. It's like each one of those emotions is kind of pointing to a different way that we've been enchanted. Enchanted by the safety when we're in fear. Enchanted by the ways in which it used to seem so great by the disgust or the revulsion. You know, these different ways of unhooking. So the path to the thorough disenchantment comes by meeting these different relationships. Not by trying to force ourselves to be present with the impermanence, but by meeting their relationships. And this begins to lead towards this quality of dispassion. Leads in the direction of dispassion, fading away of the hooks of the enchantment, of the craving, of the desire. So in this place or entering into this field or territory, let's say territory of dispassion, the mind starts to understand much more clearly that holding on to impermanent, unreliable, not self phenomena just makes no sense. And so our old patterns of craving, attachment, acquiring, acquisition begin to fade out. This word viraga meaning fade out. And the mind turns instead to letting go. And so I'd like to, these two words, fading out and letting go, I'd like to explore both of those a little bit. I like the term fading out. As Gil mentioned yesterday, you know, like a dye in a cloth. You know, we have these cloths in the kitchen that used to be really blue, and now they're kind of getting harder to distinguish from the white ones. You know, there's been a slow process of fading over time of that dye. So this exploration of the word fading out to me points to or suggests perhaps a kind of gradual process. Over the course of our lives, over the course of our practice, we may experience the different levels of desire starting to release and fade out. You know, some ways we can see this in the simple process of maturing from a child into an adult, and that some of the things that enchanted us as a child, that enchantment has been just seen through. It's just through the process of maturation, the desire for that thing that was so enchanting fades out. No longer interests us, no longer captures us. And so we can see that this fading out of desire might happen in different levels or different areas of our lives, different ways, so that it's not that, you know, all at once all desire fades out. And the Buddha, a quote from the Buddha, At a later time, I abandoned the craving for sense pleasure. I removed the fever for sense pleasure, and I abide without thirst, with a mind inwardly at peace. I see other beings who are not free from lust for sense pleasures, being devoured by craving for sense pleasure, indulging in sense pleasure, and I do not envy them. There is a delight apart from sense pleasure, apart from unwholesome states, which surpasses even divine bliss. Since I take delight in that, I do not envy what is inferior. This points to at least a couple different levels of the way things can fade in our practice. The fading away of attachment to sense pleasure the Buddha directly points to here. And he lost interest in sense pleasure, seeing other beings out there enjoying, delighting, reveling in sense pleasure. It's like, yeah, no draw in that direction. It's fading away of that movement to sense pleasure, partly happening, partly able to happen through a kind of a staged process. First of opening to a more refined pleasure, a pleasure of concentration, the pleasure of insight, the joy of insight. And in this, the Buddha also speaks of a pleasure which surpasses even divine bliss. The pleasure of divine bliss, I believe, here is referring to the pleasure of states of concentration. And we can be attached to the pleasure of states of concentration just as we can be attached to the pleasure from sense experience. And so there can be this fading away, kind of in levels. The fading away of sense pleasure can happen partly in dependence on the pleasure that comes from being present, from settling the mind in concentration. And then the Buddha points to an even more refined pleasure, I believe, of complete release from craving. He's pointing to the complete release from desire, from craving. You know, in this fading away of sense desire, you know, the Buddha talks about it as like one piece, and it's like, you know, okay, did that, moved on. And again, in my experience, it's nowhere near that simple. You know, there may be certain kinds of sense pleasure that we start to really see, you know, that just doesn't do it for me anymore, and a releasing of certain kinds of sense pleasure. But then there's this whole terrain in the middle where it can kind of seem that at times we can easily renounce a particular sense pleasure. It's like it doesn't even feel like renouncing. It's just like, yeah, the desire's not there right now. Someone today was talking about this and noticing at certain times of the day, there just wasn't a particular desire for a particular craving. Just didn't come. But later in the day, boy, there it was, right back. And so many conditions come into play on this movement towards release, towards fading away. Maybe it's, you know, how tired you are, or you know, how much sleep you've had, whether you're hungry, whether something has happened that maybe you had a bad dream. I mean, there's so many different conditions that can come into play as to whether we can not be pulled or enchanted by a particular desire. Sometimes we can really feel that absence of desire for something. It's really helpful to recognize it when it's there. Yeah. Often when I see that thing, the ice cream, for instance, I often see that, it's like, yeah, I really want it, but like right now, it's just not there. Noticing that absence of desire points in this direction of dispassion, getting familiar with what it is. But then don't be surprised when the desire for ice cream comes back the next day. Over the course of practice, the mind gradually and generally moves in the direction of deeper and deeper letting go, deeper forms of letting go. There's a meditation practice that's pointed to in the suttas that can be a kind of a natural movement of this fading away, a description of how this can unfold. I'm just going to speak about it in not from what the sutta says, but just from kind of an experiential level. Gil was pointing to ease and stillness this morning. We can land in a place of stillness. There's a kind of stillness that can be present even when there's activity. He was pointing to that. The stillness in the breath. Stillness in the knowing. And so the mind can connect to that stillness, begin to touch into the quality of that stillness, that ease, that settledness, that clarity, and resting there. When the mind can stay clear, stay mindful, and this is a mindfulness practice here, not a concentration practice, but to stay clearly aware of the quality of that stillness. The mind stays present for that. It can begin to notice, there's this stillness, but somewhere in there, in that very stillness, right in that, in the fabric of the stillness, there seems to be this very subtle disturbance. Just a little, maybe it's just a disturbance of the mind, like being interested in the state. And so, at that point, the mind gets interested in opening to that disturbance, being with that disturbance, and that movement begins to allow the release of that disturbance and a settling into yet a quiet. It's almost like energy states, shifting energy states. You're in this state, this particular quiet energy state, and being in that energy state for a while, it begins to reveal a kind of subtler movement in that energy state. And so the mind begins to recognize, there's a little bit of disturbance there. And then seeing that disturbance, opening to that disturbance, not like telling yourself, this is a problem, I'm doing something wrong. It's more like it's being revealed as you stay with that still place, and the mind starts to let go of that disturbance, and then it's like it settles into a quieter place, a stiller place. And then it does it again. In that place, being there, being mindful there, noticing, oh, there's a subtler disturbance. Whew, that one can release. In this way, the interest in the stillness itself can point to just subtle ways that the mind is holding or agitated or clinging, or and allows this fading away, this releasing to unfold. So this is at a pretty this place in this path of liberative dependent origination is at a pretty settled place in the practice. In fact, the commentaries for this particular sutta equate this dispassion, this viraga, with the first taste of liberation, with nibbana, that this point in the chain is kind of the transition to transcendence. And so this begins to point to the letting go aspect of viraga, of dispassion, and freedom. Freedom is not about getting anything. It's really radically not about getting anything. One definition in the suttas that actually points to, and this is from the suttas, and it kind of points to me to one place where the suttas kind of equate dispassion and nibbana. From this definition, this is the peaceful, this is the sublime, that is the stilling of all formations, the relinquishing of all attachments, the destruction of craving, dispassion, cessation, nibbana. Really not about getting anything. Stilling of formations, relinquishing of attachments, abandoning of craving. Another definition for freedom, for nibbana, also points to the absence. It's a definition. The Buddha says, this is nibbana, the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion. Now, we don't normally think in terms of absence of things. Our minds don't orient this way. At one point, someone talked to me and said, you know, this is an odd way to describe something with, you know, you could say, for instance, that the Grand Canyon is absent of rhinoceroses, but, like, does that tell you much? But my sense is, well, yeah, but you wouldn't say this is the Grand Canyon, the absence of rhinoceroses. You wouldn't say that. It's like it's not connected. But the Buddha says this. This is nibbana, the absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion. To me, this is like a great koan, this unknown of the absence. the absence of greed, aversion, and delusion, the non-arising of greed, aversion, and delusion. Maybe we can think about dispassion in a way as the non-arising of desire. You know, we can connect with what it means for desire to end and see that ending and kind of understand in that ending perhaps, the release, the freedom from that desire. But do we appreciate the non-arising of desire? Let's try to feel into this. Back to this reflection on, you know, being a kid. You know, the process of disenchantment might be the process of losing interest in a particular game or toy that once was so enthralling. You know, I used to love to play Candyland. No, I didn't even think about, until just this moment, I hadn't thought about Candyland in a long time. I used to love it, you know? It's just like so much joy and happiness playing that game. And somewhere in the course of childhood, the mind grew up and lost interest. You know, so this process of losing interest. And yet I remember when I was a kid, really loving to play with dolls. I had these little tiny dolls and this old dollhouse with all these furniture, and I just, you know, I had this whole fantasy world and just loved entering into that fantasy world. And at some point I began to realize it wasn't quite so satisfying, but it was hard to give it up. You know, I hung on to it for longer than I really still enjoyed it. This is that process of disenchantment. But at some point it just began to fade. But, you know, I still kept all of them. I think I was 25 years old before I gave those away. You know, just a slow process of disenchantment from the letting go. So, you know, there's this, the disenchantment we can connect with around the mind beginning to let go and lose interest. Dispassion, I think we could reflect on this non-arising. Like I just mentioned a few minutes ago, I hadn't even thought of Candyland. You know, there was neither interest nor disinterest in Candyland. It just didn't arise. The question didn't arise. That's, you know, just a, what might it be? To be in a space where greed, aversion, and delusion just don't even arise. Just a great koan. It's like an unknown, a space of unknown. We have no idea what Nibbana is, what the unconditioned is. We have no idea. No way to know. Another quote from Bhikkhu Bodhi. Though the realization of the unconditioned, or the realization of freedom, requires a turning away, a dispassion from the conditioned, it must be emphasized that this realization is achieved precisely through the understanding of the conditioned. Nibbana cannot be reached by backing off from direct confrontation with samsara to lose oneself in a blissful oblivion to the world. The path to liberation is a path of understanding, of comprehension and transcendence, not of escapism or emotional self-indulgence. The understanding of the conditioned is the way to the unconditioned. The understanding of just our experience of how we're enchanted, the meeting, direct meeting of things as they are. We can't get around it. As Joseph says, you know, people want insight into dukkha without experiencing dukkha. It doesn't work that way. We need it. That's right where the unhooking happens, right where the disenchantment can happen, in the meeting of it. The last piece I'll just bring in briefly is that sometimes this word dispassion can evoke a sense of disconnection, disengagement, even the word turning away from the conditioned brings a sense of, you know, somehow indifference or something like that. Dispassion, my understanding here is dispassion is the absence, the non-arising of our usual forms of desire, the absence of craving. It doesn't mean the lack of feeling. In fact, I think the mind, when it's not colored, when it doesn't have those colorations of desire, all that added stuff Gil talks about, you know, the way we added all this stuff to our minds, when all of those additions fall away, it's not that there's a blank blob there. It feels like there's actually more space for empathy, for connection, for compassion. And so I don't see dispassion and compassion as being somehow antithetical. In fact, I think dispassion can create the conditions for compassion. This kind of letting go, of fading away, I just want to remind you, you know, remind us all that the path is only found right where you are right now. That may be in the midst of confusion or anxiety or happiness or concentration. We can't do dispassion. It really is a result. It's a fruit in a way. It's a fruit of the practice. We can't try to do it. We can notice, we can recognize times when we might be able to see Oh, unhooked from that. Non-arising of craving. So it's really a result of practice. The path, the activity of practice is just here, just now, and wherever you are. That's enough. Open to that. The unfolding will follow from there. Let's sit together.